This episode is brought to you by Fetch. Fetch is a kennel alternative right here in Denver, not a traditional doggy daycare or boarding school. They offer one-on-one private pet care for all kinds of pets, both furry and non-furry. And their employees are experienced, insured, bonded, and background checked, so you can rest easy knowing your pet is in good hands. Basically, they know pets. I used to watch a Burmese mountain dog named Sven, who was just like walking a polar bear. It was insane. Fetch offers pet sitting, dog walking, pet taxi, medication administration, and more. And he hated going on walks. I could like walk him around the block and then he was like, he just liked to lay in the bathtub. So if you're looking for high quality pet care you can trust, check out Fetch at northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. That's northdenver.fetchpetcare.com. Today on CityCast Denver. There are two really weird-looking buildings rising in Denver right now, both selling themselves as green in a brand new way. Maybe you've seen the one downtown that's supposed to look like an aspen tree, or the one with the big crack down the middle in Rhino. Denverite senior reporter Kyle Harris has been inside both, and he's on today to tell us what he saw. Today is Monday, March 25th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Kyle Harris, welcome back to CityCast Denver.
Thanks for having me.
And our producer, Paul Caroli, is here too.
Hey, Bree.
Hey, we're talking buildings today.
We sure are. Kyle, we're going to talk about these two very distinctive, very green in different ways, very new buildings going up in Denver right now. And we thought we might give you the choice which one to start with, but you have to describe it.
Okay, so
what do they look like?
I don't know which I'll do first. It'll pop out of my mouth. The Populous. Let's start there.
The Populous.
If you've been on Colfax right there by Civic Center Park lately, you have probably faced some gnarly traffic from all that construction.
Yes.
There's a big
triangle.
I'm like, oh, great. I failed geometry probably.
It's an interesting plot of land.
Yeah,
that's
It's a tiny plot of land, and they're building this hotel on it. And they are, you know, branding it as the first carbon. They're saying carbon positive.
Which is interesting.
Carbon negative is another way of talking about that.
Yeah, we talk about it as carbon neutral.
Carbon neutral?
Well, no, because carbon positive, they have a very specific meaning about it because they're doing more.
They're doing more. So they're saying they are sequestering more carbon than they are producing through construction.
Okay.
And the way they're doing that is by planting trees. And we can get in that in a moment.
Let's do it. What do they mean?
Well, okay. So like, let's say you take a flight. Right. Mm-hmm. And you get on that airplane and you burn a bunch of fossil fuels and you've produced a whole bunch of carbon. Right. So let's say you want to balance that out. Maybe you plant a bunch of trees that sequester a similar amount of carbon.
So it's not, I think what you're saying is like, we're not going to see, I think it's 72,000 trees is what they said. They're not planted at this hotel. It's somewhere else.
It's
like a connection.
Yes.
It's like a, we did this, we're offsetting it by this.
Yes, correct. If it was 72,000 trees on that plot of land, they would be bonsai trees.
That would be
and it would
crazy
fill the building.
And awesome. But yes.
I think we should do that. Basically we're talking about this big building with these kind of strange aspen tree inspired windows. If you think about your normal window, it's rectangular, it's square, whatever. You look out and have a traditional picture frame view. These are these kind of round, knotty looking shapes, kind of like something you might see. And I think this is true about both of these buildings. There's something that kind of reminds you of like Disneyland or an amusement park about them, like in terms of how they've been manufactured.
I would also say it's got a little touch of mid-mod era Googie-ish.
It
seems a little retro to me.
There's something retro about it.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. I think for me, what's retro about it is I remember being a kid and looking at wood paneling and you see the weird patterns in the wood paneling and you're like, oh my God, I think I see an elf over there. I don't know if you all ever have done this, but like, that's the feeling. You get these kind of shapes that are very organic.
That's the good.
It's very stylized. So one part of the environmental thing is that they are planting all these trees. The other thing is they're trying to source stuff locally. There is not parking attached to it directly, which is a big deal because it means people who are coming in, flying in for conventions or whatever, are going to be going straight there through public transit, through an Uber, and they're just staying there. There's not a whole lot of parking being added.
I have a question about that because you included this line in your story about this little plot that the hotel is being built on was once the site of Colorado's first gas station. And this hotel has no parking spaces. What are you doing there? What did you see there?
You know, so much of downtown was devoted to car culture.
Sure.
Right? I mean, there are, you know, you think about, and when I say downtown, I mean the city center, but you think about Broadway and all the little mechanic shops that were along the way and car dealers. I mean, you think about what downtown was built for and how it may or may not be changing in the future. I think there's a dream for some urbanists that this is a car-free place, that this is a place that at least has reduced car traffic, both from a climate change perspective and also just a general enjoyability perspective. Like, do we like this place? Is it fun to move around in, or does it feel scary? So I think that there is something lovely about that.
It's certainly a marker of change, the fact that there's no parking in this brand new hotel.
It says something
about where we are.
Yeah, it's a statement as much as it's like a function of the building, I think.
And it may be like a marketing thing too.
Totally. Right?
I mean, when we think about what green means, there's always the question, is this legitimately green, or is this like a trendy thing to kind of appease the adventurous soul who comes to Colorado and wants to see the Rocky Mountains and feel like they're part of like a John Denver utopia, right? Like that is a deep desire for a lot of people. It's like tap into that feeling about what's special about Denver for tourists. It's often not actually Denver itself. It's the mountains. And the views from this thing are incredible.
Yeah, tell us more about what it's like inside.
Inside, what I can say is you're looking out these weird shaped windows. That is basically what I've seen inside. And the land, you know, you see the Capitol, you see Civic Center Park, depending on where you are, you see the mountains. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. One of the things I'm excited to try out myself or see is the ground floor, because there is some hope of bringing in like a restaurant, a bar, some sort of thing like that that attracts locals where we will allegedly go and have a coffee, have a drink, whatever, right?
I think that's such a long – that's part of the function of all hotels is to have that aspect that brings the locals in. But we are still curious, what kind of thing will it be? What kind of vibe will that restaurant or bar have?
Very local from what we're told, right? Very local. What that means, how that plays out is, you know, has yet to be seen.
So you talked to some of the folks behind this new hotel. When they talk about the carbon positive aspect, like what do they mean? What's your sense of them?
Urban Villages, which is the company behind the thing, is very passionate about the idea of doing development in a way that feels environmentally sustainable, right? Finding all sorts of ways of doing that. Hotels are generally not the first thing we think of when we're thinking about environmental sustainability. We're talking about travel. We're talking about huge carbon footprints from people crossing the country, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they're passionate about the idea. And I think they have an enthusiasm that extends far beyond marketing. And they look at that in terms of both this hotel project but then some of the other things that they're working on in terms of like residential and stuff like that. So they have an incredible enthusiasm. They also acknowledge that the greenest thing you can do is use the thing you already have, right? So they acknowledge that there is, in any construction project, going to be an environmental toll. Construction is one of the most wasteful industries out there. You know, I think the tree planting thing for them is a way of kind of trying to address this. There's a lot to be investigated and looked into about how one-to-one that exchange actually is, a lot to dig into. And I've not done that work yet, to be frank. So I can't speak to the success of it yet. There are certainly academics, environmentalists who raise a big question mark as to whether or not it can plant some trees and make up for whatever waste goes into.
Sure. Yeah. I've heard stories about these tree plantings and then like 10 years later, the trees get bulldozed. So like, what did it even mean in the first place? Kyle, let's move on to the other one.
One River North. So if you have been on I-70 recently, driving from the west to the east, you have probably seen this towering building with a giant crack down the center. And this is One River North. That crack is not an accident. It's not a mistake. It's not a broken building. This is how the building's meant to look. To me, like when I think about this building, I think a lot about its kind of industrial sort of chrome glass exterior and then this big kind of concrete thing down the center. I think of dandelions bursting through the sidewalk. I think of, you know, nature reclaiming the city. There's a lot that goes on when you look at
this
building.
That's interesting because that is what they're doing. It does look like the green, the crack, what you're calling it. I like to call it a garden gash.
Yeah.
But it looks like it happened to the building. Like yeah. nature is coming through it. And that's kind of an odd thing to do if you're building the building. You want the building to be the draw.
It is an odd thing to do. I mean, it's certainly not your normal build. And I think that they're excited about this. Mad Architects, like the folks behind it, are very enthusiastic about playing with form in this way and really thinking about design and nature and industry and city and all of those things. One of the funniest things our readers have pointed out early on when they first saw the renderings of the building, you know, they saw the glass on there and they began to think about the birds. Mm-hmm. So we talk about nature. Well, the birds are going to love that glass and fly right toward it. And was it Falco, the New York owl that recently died?
Oh, yeah.
This is terrible.
I mean, this is a legitimate problem for sure. I mean, people have been talking about this for years. I know there's rules about this. In my backyard, I had this problem. I had to move my bird feeder because some birds were flying into a window. I had two birds. It was horrifying.
Oh, gosh.
It was such a sad morning waking up and then going out and seeing a bird just, you know. Well,
you try to feed the birds and look what happens.
I felt so bad. I felt sad. And I don't want this for these developers of this new building.
I don't want, or someone living in that building.
Yeah. So the developers, the folks who are working on programming, you're going to work with the residents. They're aware of this and aware of some of the concerns about those windows. And they've talked about actually figuring out when their migration moments, where a couple, few times a year, where the birds are flying through the area and are probably more prone to smack into those windows, figuring out when those times are, and then shutting off lights during those times and being like really tactical about when you can have your lights on, when you can't, in an effort to save the birds. We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I think they're onto something with the lights, but they've created a habitat with the greenery that's going to be in this crack. It's going to attract wildlife.
It seems like it will.
Like for the plants to thrive, they'll need pollinators. They'll need an ecosystem.
Yeah. I'll say like being up in the building is really different than looking at the building from a distance, right? When you're in there, you are seeing also this like merger of nature and industry and city and all of that. And it's really fascinating. I mean, when you get in there, you're seeing all of that industrial part of Five Points, the River North Art District, like that whole area you're seeing downtown, you're seeing the mountains and all those 14ers. I mean, the folks who are living there have incredible views. And that whole crack, crevice, whatever you called it, which I thought was better.
Garden gash.
It's when you're in there, you're in these sort of outdoor spaces that are going to be kind of community oriented for the people who can live there. And they're beautiful. They're very cool.
How are they integrated with the rooms and the rest of the building?
For some people, it's going to be part of your private porch, right? Oh, so you will have a little section of that.
Wow.
If you can afford it, right? There are also common areas out there. So you can, you know, just like you might leave your apartment and go to a gym in your apartment building, you might go to a little garden area outdoors. Yeah. They've talked about doing yoga out there and stuff like that.
That would be so great.
But we're still in a boom time, right? We're still doing great. I think we're building. I'm thinking about the other side of this or even just winter. Like what if the economy goes to garbage and then all of a sudden there's nobody to take care of those plants?
Well,
is the dream dead?
It's rare that we don't have haves in our country, even in moments of economic despair.
Sure.
I think if I recall, they said one of the apartments would go for as much as $16,000 a month. So these are
good
pricey
Lord.
Places, right? So, I mean, I think the question is like, can someone afford that?
The rich people will be fine. Okay.
The rich people will be fine. They pay an HOA. The HOA takes care of the landscaping. It's they're good. Actually, it's not an HOA because it's a rental, but they're their rent goes to the upkeep of all of that. And it's one of the amenities in their building.
I feel you on that though, Bree. I mean, we just talked about the Brown Palace last week. 100 years ago, that was the one river north of the day. And now we're in this situation where the owners are kind of gutting it and changing how the business model works, not taking care of it the way it used to. And it's going to show.
Yeah, I just think that I'll be curious to see that building in 20 years.
I mean, if the building, I think about like the Central Michigan Depot in Detroit, which is this building that was just incredible that fell into complete disrepair. And now they're trying to revitalize it.
Huh.
I years ago walked through that building when it was not open to the public, and it was incredibly weird in there. And you could see a building like this in a certain kind of apocalyptic economic collapse really turning into something strange. Though, for now...
For what it is in this moment, it's beautiful. In this moment,
it's beautiful, and it looks fairly durable. It looks like something that's going to last and be a part of this city's landscape for years to come. Right now, it's sticking out over there, right? Mm-hmm. There isn't a whole lot of other building around it.
Especially that height,
The developers who are behind it did recently buy another plot of land over there. There's a lot of activity and energy. So even like how it sticks out in the landscape might look really different in a few years. I think about the Source Hotel, which when it first opened
it
was just
crazy.
And now you can't see it. There's been so much change down there. I mean, it's hard to find.
Mm-hmm. You don't notice it the way that you did initially.
Speaking of the prices, like, did you get a sense from the people behind this one that it's been popular?
Well, they are selling. They're anticipating it filling up. We were talking a little bit earlier about the sort of appetite for growth and the fact the buildings are still going up in Denver. And we're still seeing, you know, in Sun Valley, all over the city, we're seeing cranes still. That's probably going to be shifting a little bit in the years to come. And talking to the Colorado Apartment Association and builders, what they're telling me is that this sort of appetite for what some developers describe as luxury housing for people who are making above the median area income, quite a lot above it often, is falling out of style in terms of opening up new buildings, building new buildings.
Interesting.
Income-restricted housing, affordable housing is going to be the direction that they are moving in. And so, like, from their perspective, you know, these are market-driven folks who use market-driven logic, and they say the market now demands workforce housing.
I'm thinking about, you were just talking about where the Source was. Before that, even 10 years before that, there was an apartment building that went up right where Broadway curves around and it becomes Brighton Boulevard. And it was a brand new building. Everything else around it was still industrial. And I had a couple friends move in there on, I think they had like Section 8 vouchers because they couldn't fill the building. This was a brand new building. So I just wonder, like, those kinds of economic turns can change the price of a unit in a building even as fancy as that one.
Sure. I mean, think about Detroit, right? You had mansions in Detroit that at a certain point you could buy for $10,000 or $15,000. What is luxury one day is not necessarily luxury the next. The mansions of Capitol Hill are another perfect example. I mean, you have some of those mansions which have turned into a ton of
apartments.
Multifamily housing.
Yeah. So you're saying our commune situation that you and I want to live in, Kyle, could happen in the Garden Gash apartments, which is what we would call it. Our DIY space.
The DIY space.
Yeah.
Yes. No. I mean, I who knows? It is possible that that will be the next DIY space in 70 years.
You know what? You all can share the penthouse next to mine.
Yeah.
That one's just for me, though.
Fair enough.
I love what you're talking about here about the how this building is maybe like the last of its era. You know, maybe there isn't going to be a building quite this opulent built for a while. And how maybe it represents like the culmination of this 2010s era of Denver where we saw this explosive growth. Like this was, at least architecturally speaking, maybe the pinnacle that we were going to reach in that era.
Who knows? I mean, I think architecturally speaking, a lot of that quote unquote supposedly luxury housing was architecturally not that interesting to a lot of folks. So maybe this is the pinnacle. I always hold out hope, and this is definitely hope, that income-restricted housing, affordable housing doesn't have to be ugly, right? It could be beautiful. It's expensive. It's more expensive. Is there will to fund that? I don't know. Is it profitable? Probably not. Does that dictate the future aesthetic of all this building? It's what I'm told. And it's also important not to forget that we have the Ball Arena, you know,
development
coming, the River Mile coming. There's a lot more stuff coming.
Well, we've kind of danced around this, but like, what do you think these two buildings say about our architecture in Denver?
Well, we're experimenting, right? Like there is a moment here where people want to try some new things out. And we've done it before. We did it with the dam. We've done it with, I mean, in some ways, the convention center, I think, has some cool stuff. But like these, what I like about these two is that they are like self-consciously a bit oddball and a bit like daring, and like there are going to be people who hate it and people who love it. And I think that's fun. For me, I think it's fun.
I also think about how the cash register building has become such an icon for our skyline, and it's not that old. Yeah. So the possibility of adding new things to our skyline, which has happened, I think the spire might be one of those that's now in our skyline. We're going to still continue to see things added to our context to build what Denver looks like to everybody. And it'll look different in 20 years. And we'll think about it differently in 20 years. Like, absolutely. Oh yeah, of course that building's included. And right now we're like, what is this new giant crazy building? So,
oh yeah. And I mean, this is one of the fun things to think about is how the new thing, whether it's sort of mass manufactured architecture or something really notable like these two buildings, how the new thing is often griped about and complained about. And then at a certain point, we all start getting a little nostalgic for it, right? Like our nostalgia for some really loathed stuff is like part of our cultural fabric. And I love that.
That is the argument that people who love brutalism have to have all the time.
I feel like this is maybe an unpopular opinion, but I feel like this is going to happen for the buildings that people call fugly. These like kind of cookie cutter 2010s era apartment buildings. Is Bree's going to disagree with me about that? That's fine. But I think there's going to come a time when we're going to think those ones, that was special.
You are not alone in that opinion. There are many people who share it. One of my favorite stories I worked on recently was, you know, we were doing Street Week over on Tennyson. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what about those like slot homes? Like when they were created, everyone was very like dystopian about what they would mean. People be disconnected from the community. It was like hostile. So I went over there and I was like, maybe these people are like all losing it in there and like, you know, super depressed and disconnected. So I like stood outside for a while to talk to some residents and I did. They love it. They're always out and about in their community. Really? They all knew each other. They were all like, I mean, you know, they're like, we know the old timers, the new timers. And they love the slot homes. One guy left a single family home in Sloan's Lake, which people love, moved into a slot home before they were banned, like the old-fashioned ones, mm-hmm. and he is so happy and loves it because he's more connected to community.
I mean, to me, you're just making the case for multifamily residences because this is a very interesting revelation to me. I just walked down Tennyson last weekend and I had the absolutely opposite experience.
It's definitely like as crying. Someone walking through the neighborhood, it's different. Jarring.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they've also done the preservation effort. So you have the slot homes next to preserved old buildings.
They just like weird monuments to another time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, I think what you're pointing out though, Kyle, is it's subjective, but it's also really about the people at the end of the day. It doesn't even matter what the structure is. We can have all these opinions about it. It's really about how we interact with each other in these spaces.
Do we have community? Spaces. Do we connect or are we isolated and alone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whether you're living in a slot home or, you know,
a canyon,
a crag,
10 floors up.
Well, Kyle, Paul, thanks. This was great.
This was fun. Thank you.
What do you think of One River North and the populace, or as I like to call it, the cheese grater building? Actually, no, that's more important. What do you think we should call them? Do you like Garden Gash like Paul or something else? The Green Building Hotline is open. Text or leave us a voicemail at 720-500-5418. Again, that number is 720-500-5418. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell a bird about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See ya! Tell the other people in your commune about us. I'm just kidding.